We'll do a brief meditation tonight about holding bad ethics and modes of conduct as supreme, and also about the other mental factor of wrong views. Okay, so with the one of holding bad ethics and modes of conduct as supreme, remember that it's a deluded kind of intelligence that believes that the purification of mental defilements can be possible through either practices that don't purify the mental defilements or through ethical acts or unethical acts that are seen as ethical in that system. So it's a real confusion about what is the path to enlightenment, what is ethical and what isn't ethical, what practices purify the mind and what practices don't. So spend some time and just reflect on in your life, maybe earlier on in your life or maybe now, times when this attitude has arisen in you. Times when you thought certain acts were ethical but now you understand weren't. Or times when you thought certain practices lead to liberation but now you understand that they don't. Or maybe look at things that arise now, questions you have about your own beliefs, your own views now, questioning whether they're perhaps fall under this mental factor, or maybe you have some doubt and think they do, maybe some doubt and you think they don't. Or also reflect on this mental factor and see how it arises in the society around us, the various ethical views people have, various conduct that they think leads to spiritual realization. Okay, so in essence, try and understand this mental factor through examining your own life and views, as well as the views and behavior of people you see in our culture as a whole. And think of specific examples so that you really get a sense of what that mental factor is about. Mental factor of wrong views, which is also a kind of deluded intelligence that denies the existence of things that exist, or that believes in things that doesn't exist, that don't exist. And so again, check how that mental factor functions in you. Although maybe by the time you're able to identify something as a wrong view, you've moved from it being a wrong view to being a doubt. But still it's helpful, because maybe you can see things in the past where you had many wrong views, perhaps about cause and effect, existence of the Triple Gem, or various things like this. And so see how that mental factor has manifested in you in the past and how it manifests now. And also think about how it functions in the society as a whole. And again, make very specific examples. What did you come up with for this first mental factor, holding bad ethics and modes of conduct as supreme? What kind of examples did you think of? I'll make some examples.
Well, for wrong views, I thought that I think it's in our society, if you make spiritual practice a priority in your life without giving enough time to worldly concerns, you could think that you're attached to religion or there's something wrong with you or you're screwed up somehow.
You're escaping. Why did you think that it fell more in the category of wrong views?
Because I couldn't, in that attitude, I couldn't identify specific, like your whole things, identify holding something up as being supreme, or as being a supreme mode of liberation.
Right.
Because I could be at that attitude kind of thing, that the being concerned with liberation is somehow supreme.
Because there's no such thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key in differentiating those two. Is that wrong modes of ethics and conduct is having a confused idea about what the path is, whereas wrong views is just kind of the general functioning of things, being confused about that. Actually, of all these five speculative views, they're all essentially some type of wrong view, but they're just divided into five so that you have more things to talk about. But I think that's a good point that, you know, the way our society is thinking that if you're interested in something spiritual or place that as a priority in your life, that something's wrong with you because liberation doesn't exist. Money's the meaning of life.
Yeah?
That's kind of a branch of what he was talking about, about what is human potential.
I had a hard time speaking to him, because when I started thinking about some views, I just flashed back being a teenager and remembering what my goals in life were. And how screwed up they were, and like how I had this memory clearly of being with my parents on vacation, and they were in the room, and walking into the hotel room, and I had this fantasy that I was this girl in a commercial, and I was smoking a cigarette because my parents were in there, and I laid in the couch, and I was thinking, I was thinking of how I thought successful and happy was. And it took me off on a tangent when I started thinking about that, because I felt so sad. I don't remember at what point I started turning away from it. But all of a sudden I had the realization that it was such a great moment, my joy to be just in front of me. You know, that however little I had done, had whatever little I had learned at some point, I started to create something else for me. So I changed from what we were doing in renunciation. I started to realize, think more and more of renunciation. And, you know, I was in downtown today and looking at all the things and realizing how they were being happiness and how far that was from what my ideal happiness was. So it relates to this, but I was seeing it really big.
Well, you could see, like when you were talking about your values as a teenager and them being quite confused and screwed up, that underlying that is this wrong view that there's only this lifetime. Yeah? And so what you were doing, what you were trying to be, was based on problem. Maybe it was even an unverbalized view that there's only this lifetime. So the only kind of pleasure that's happiness possible is the pleasure that comes through the senses. And then your actions were the manifestation of that wrong view, you know, that wrong view getting lived out in action. And then you can really see how much you've changed. And you can see how underlying that is the whole thing of our senses are the only thing that's real. Mm-hmm. And that there's no kind of cause, you know, ethical cause and effect of what we're doing now, having something as a result afterwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. And that's how these ones work, is that we don't know that we have a wrong view or that we're holding on to an improper mode of ethics is leading to happiness. We absolutely know. I mean, if we knew we had a wrong view, we wouldn't hold on to it.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Know it. Yeah. That's why sometimes I think it's very helpful to look back in our past, because then we can see a little bit of difference there. You know, because I was thinking about when I was in college and I had struggled with this whole thing of God and ethics and all this, and I decided, you know, God didn't exist, so ethics didn't exist, there was no result, so if it feels good, do it and don't worry about it. And how much, you know, I held that as a very strong belief in my life for a number of years. Thinking it was right, you know. If I thought it was wrong, I certainly wouldn't have held it. But I thought it was right. I was trying to convince other people of it, you know. Is another mental factor that we're going to come to. It's got one called concealment. Yeah? Where we, you know, somebody tries to point out to us kind of where we're confused, where we're going astray, and we just don't see it. Yeah. Now, either we consciously rationalize it and justify it, or we just ignore. But that very often has an underlying basis of these wrong views. You know, principal thing, you know, there's only this life, there, so there's no ethical implications of our actions on future times. Because it's hard sometimes for people to see the results of their actions just in this lifetime. Because they say bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people. So sometimes if a person doesn't think deeply about it, they can still have an ethical view, just holding of this lifetime. But if they do think deeply about it, it becomes more difficult. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what I mean. That's why it's...
You never do see the connection.
Oh, you don't... Yeah, right. You may never see it, but just because we don't see something with our senses doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And so somebody might have that belief it does, and that belief can influence how they live the rest of their life.
Part that I don't understand
why you need future lives to set up an ethical system.
That might be helpful for one person.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But somebody might come to a certain reason that makes sense for them, but that reason might be able to be logically refuted because it hasn't been well thought out. So it might be a belief in the right thing, but for the wrong reason. You know, for example, we used to ask him a lot about, you know, this whole thing of believing in God. And that's kind of a typical example of a wrong view. because, you know, I mean, a creator of the universe, manager of the universe is something that just kind of doesn't make sense. But, on the other hand, for some people, so a belief in God, somebody may feel, well, God exists, so therefore I better... You know, watch what I do because God's going to punish me, I'll watch what I do because God will reward me. And so from the point of view of that person, that functions quite well because at least that helps them live an ethical life and they aren't harming themselves and harming others. And so when you're working with people who have that kind of view, if that works for them and they're stable in that, you don't want to refute it if they're not ready to see something else. Because you might refute that and then leave them in this total ethical void, which would be very, very damaging for them. But on the other hand, if it's somebody that you can get a sense that you could refute that and help them to see, you know, kind of the whole structure of the Four Noble Truths and, you know, continuum of mind and things like that, then that might work. So, you know, that comes into a whole other area of what does it mean to be skillful in working with people. But when we're talking about, you know, what are right views and wrong views in terms of us and how we should live, and I think it's very helpful to look at, a lot of the religious views that we were raised with about, you know, what's the path to liberation and, what is suffering, what's the cause of suffering, what's the path and what's the result, yeah? And to really look at how, you know, the views we were brought up with or the views we used to have ourselves. And we can often see that, you know, how they become this kind of wrong views in terms of denial of cause, denial of effect, denial of, you know, relationship, things like that. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because people would say, doesn't believing in rebirth do the same thing as believing in God? It's the right thing for the wrong reason. But from kind of a more logical viewpoint, when you really look at, when you understand the nature of mind, it really comes down very much to understanding what mind is, and that mind is an impermanent phenomena, you know, and so impermanent phenomena are all produced by causes. And so then, you know, if the present moment of mind was produced by a cause, you have to see that cause, and then you have to see the cause of the cause and the cause of the cause. And then you get to, you know, get a sense of this continuity of mind, each moment being produced by the previous moment. And you begin to see that there's no other way that mind can come to exist except by this continuity. And then that automatically takes you back into past lives and into future lives. Yeah? But in order to have that kind of view of cause and effect, you know, we have to have first a sense of what mind is. And I think this is one of the toughest things in our culture, especially, you know, because this is what going to some of these dialogues with the scientists and His Holiness really shows me, is that scientists, they don't know what mind is. And when you ask them what mind is, then the subject gets changed. You know? Or people say mind is brain, which is, you know, a Western example of another wrong view. Our mind is just an epiphenomenon of the brain. Okay? But to be able to see how rebirth is different from believing in God in terms of acting as a support for ethics, and it depends on understanding what mind is.
Because the ethics are very well defined in everyday action, where I'm fine talking about a void, because we are left with a void in the sense of this. I feel that as my understanding of Buddhism grows and my renunciation grows, my ethics change.
Mm.
And what occurs a lot of the times is that I found myself in between responsibility and guilt, in between. You know, because there is not an ethic score in Buddhism that I could go by in everyday life. It's supposed to come from an understanding that I don't have. So I have to rely on my Christian ethics to live this life. And sometimes we get very confused.
Yeah.
Even in little things like the biggest one, which is money. And it's really hard because we, you know, we get these abstract concepts, but we don't get everyday life tools. And it takes years to start to translate that into how I live my life.
And
so,
and the thing is, what it's doing is it necessitates that we think about our own beliefs, and that we look at our own motivations, and that we see that ethics is not something being imposed upon us from outside. It's not a legal system. So it's much harder, isn't it? Because a legal system, you know, it's like you can negotiate with God. Hey, that's not a negative action. Look, I'll prove it to you, and you get your religious lawyer. Yeah. But with karma, you can't do that.
If you have this mysticism, you can just Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Most of what I could see, the basic, is not basic anywhere else in the world. So where is my world? Where are my ethics? I didn't know so much.
Well, it's again, you know, I mean, it's coming, we can see how we're looking so much for somebody else to tell us when it's enough or when it's good. We're looking for the outside approval. And if, well, they say if I'm doing enough, well, then that's okay, then I can keep the rest of my stuff. I don't need to give it away because somebody else says that I'm generous enough, you know. So it's like completely avoiding looking at the mind and understanding their motivation. If, you know, somebody else says it's okay, that's good enough.
To me, the moral system is Christianity. I mean, where it broke down for me is that it wasn't lacking. It lacked a way of internalizing. It really does come from the outside. And it creates a lot of behavior that's disingenuous. Because they're really trying to do it. They haven't got down to the source at all.
So how is everybody in terms of believing in God? Yeah, exactly. Because I think there's a lot of underlying assumptions there. And a whole culture that supports it, and a whole system of psychology that supports it, or a whole system of evolutionary biology that supports it. Because, I mean, there's the whole assumption, the scientific method, that there's, I mean, unless you talk about quantum physics and what you were saying about the experimental changing the results, you know, the interaction of the, yeah. But that's a relatively new concept, and generally the way we live our lives is we feel there's an objective world outside there that we can measure, and our measuring of it doesn't change it. Yeah? And that's how a lot of science is... It's done. Yeah? Right. Yeah? And even in psychology, you know, that we have some kind of concrete self or some kind of concrete potential that we have to find out who we are or some kind of concrete character. I mean, there's all these underlying assumptions that... And to me, this was one of the fascinating things about living in another culture for so long, is I started coming up, I kept bumping my nose into all these assumptions that I never even knew existed, because I was so sure that's the way things were. Yeah.
My relationship to God, I find that I don't believe in God. I'm having a feeling with God. But whenever the meditation comes, the emotional God arrives. Mm-hmm. It's not a rational God. Mm-hmm. It's a rational God that arises. Mm-hmm. That deals with, it's funny, because that meditation is coming from pain in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really sad. Really, really sad. It's like almost accepting, really accepting death. It's really weird. And it's like really, what's really strange about it is that when I started to realize it, that when God shows up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even like I had this thing where I sometimes like I care very much for and mm-hmm. a person's dying, and I find myself praying to God when this person will die. And that's the only time I can thank God.
Yeah.
And I lack of perception.
Uh-huh.
And that the God would be the only thing that would stop them from that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so emotionally great.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I think of my son, or if I think, it's like if I think of my son being sick, my Buddhism would go out the window and I would just pray to God that my son is sick. Because you need something that is going to, and sometimes I've gotten one step. I mean, it's really hard work, but I have to be so relaxed to be able to go to one step and say, we're going to die. We're all going to die. And relax to the point that it doesn't matter if you're going to die. But I have to be in such a safe place to get there. I mean, you know, I'm telling you, and I feel like something's like great. You know, it's so emotional. And that's it, that's what God's saying.
Yeah. And I think it's incredible that you can really see that in yourself, you know? Because I think so often we become Buddhists and we think, oh, well, all of that is, you know, that's my previous life, you know? When I went to Sunday school, I'm not like that anymore. And then we see, like you said, you know, I mean, that habit is still there. That view is there at some level. You did turn it off, or you didn't?
I did.
Oh.
I didn't know that you said that, because I'm sitting here thinking, well, maybe I'm going to. I've heard other Buddhists, I don't know where I've read this, but I've heard people say you can be a Buddhist and not necessarily give up whatever religion you're raised with, but you can still have a sense of belonging. And I've never really struggled with that. I've never really examined it. I just know. Like other people, I have to do that. But this time of year is very present. And I've just sort of, I've given up trying to get around.
Uh-huh.
I've done. I said, well, that's part of who I am. If you chuck it entirely as to say, you know, the bundle of stuff I call my personality and culture and life, it's true, it isn't me. And it feels like I'm doing my own private decision with the whole thing that I'm not going to, that it doesn't have the depth. The idea of Christian God doesn't have a depth or a meaning for me that these ideas do, but that it means something culturally at least.
Mm-hmm.
And emotionally. and with that emotional part, I can't reconcile it. So I just sort of live with both. Because I don't see either reconciling it in any way that would really make sense or coming out. I'm thinking of that a lot when I spoke to you about religions. And if it's the first thing,
I think a lot of these things require us to look more deeply and redefine things. You know, because when you were saying, you know, do we have to give up our previous religion, it depends what we mean by our previous religion. Because how much of our previous religion was religious beliefs, how much of it was emotional habits that felt very comfortable because we bonded with people in the community, how much of it was a sense of identity or a sense of beauty. So we have to really see like what in what we call religious belief was like culture or bonding or whatever, and what was actually religious belief. Yeah? Because there's a big difference between these things. And I think it's real helpful to look at ourselves and see in ourselves, you know, what part is culture, what part's really religious.
And the whole question of how it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes it's an emotional reaction against what we grew up in, and sometimes it's the same thing but more in depth of what we grew up. And, you know, it's various permutations. There's this story, one of my friends tells a story about, you know, he's a Buddhist teacher and he was teaching in a a Christian country of some sort, and the person came to him and said, you know, kind of like, I'm in between the two religions, but, you know, if I'm a Buddhist, I'm afraid I'm going to go to Christian hell, but if I'm a Christian, I'm afraid I'm going to go to Buddhist hell. So he was doing things, but in the other way, you know, how to make yourself more miserable. I think that's a really good point, because when you study with a teacher for a while, at least I know with my teachers, the answers they gave to different people, to the same question from different people, was different, you know, because you could see it's not like there's one objective reality out there, you know, when your motivation is to benefit, you speak to what, to where a person's at. So first you have to tell me what you want to hear, and then I'll design the talk. You know?